alcoholic.
I absolutely love that part of the reading. God could and would if he were sought. And I just want to flip over to page 46 of We Agnostics. It says, we found that God does not make too hard of terms for those who seek him. His terms aren't impossible. He's not going to ask you to jump through hoops of fire or dive under moving cars or anything. The terms are easy and light. Just a little bit of trust. I'm going to be talking about myself tonight, but what this really is a story about God, a story about this higher power that I found in this room that has been the X factor that has completely changed my life forever. So I just want to read this. There's no page number for this, but it's page 275. But if we flip one over, they have all these stories in the back of the big book. These are all stories that are for people just like us with different circumstances. Some people, you know, young people, older people, people who have seen some of the worst, have done some of the worst, been through some of the worst. And all of us in here tonight, we get to kind of write a couple pages of our own stories in here. This one is from They Stopped in Time. Among today's incoming AA members, many have never reached the advanced stages of alcoholism, though given time, all might have. Most of these fortunate ones have had little or no acquaintance with delirium, with hospitals, asylums, and jails. Some were drinking heavily, and there had been occasional serious episodes. But with many, drinking had been little more than a sometimes uncontrollable nuisance. Seldom have any of these either lost health, business, family, or friends. Why do men and women like this join AA? The 17 who now tell their experiences answer that question. They saw that they had become actual or potential alcoholics, even though no serious harm had yet been done. They realized that repeated lack of drinking control, when they really wanted control, was the fatal symptom that spelled problem drinking. This, plus mounting emotional disturbances, convinced them that compulsive alcoholism already had them, that complete ruin would only be a question of time. Seeing this danger, they came to AA right here. They realized that in the end, alcoholism could be as mortal as cancer. Certainly no sane man would wait for a malignant growth to become fatal before seeking help. Therefore, these 17 AAs and hundreds of thousands like them, us here tonight, have been saved years of infinite suffering. They sum it up something like this. We didn't wait to hit bottom because, thank God, we could see the bottom. Actually, the bottom came up to hit us. They sold us on Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I began my life as, we were all kids at some point. People looked after us. We kind of placed our trust, our lives, in the care of someone else. And we've always kind of done that. We start that way. We trust someone else, a guardian for safety. We have a parent. We have an older brother, older sister, whatever. Or maybe a friend. You know, we hit the ground running in life already pretty much being forced to trust someone. You know, this is your parent. You're going to stick by them. They're going to protect you from this and that. This is your dad. This is your mom. Stay with your brothers, stay with your friends, and stay close to them. They're your net, they're your lifeline. Trust in them, follow them, do what they do. They'll keep you safe. And I think in all of us, that's just become sort of nature. I mean, we look for someone we can feel safe with. It's how we make it through life here. So me being one of those kids, I did that same thing, just like all of us did. We were children, and somewhere along the line, I became a man. I became a man. I became a husband. I became a worker. I became all kinds of things. life happened pretty quick. Well, a lot of other things happened too. I became a husband, and when I became a husband, I learned that life is um, life is driven by, you're propelled forward by, you kind of choose what propels you forward when you become a man. You know, a lot of, or you become a woman, you become an adult, really. So I realize now that a lot of the things that propelled me forward was I tried to avoid pain. No matter what I did, if there was something I was needed to be held culpable for or something that I knew I needed to do, but I just didn't want to face it. I became propelled forward in life by just an avoidance of pain, an avoidance of responsibility. There were certain things I just didn't want to look at. You know, I grew up homeless. I didn't live in a house until I was like 7 years old or something like that. I had it a bit rough growing up, growing up in shelters. The one in, specifically, I spent like 4 years of my childhood in the San Luis Obispo shelter over there, just in and out of there. Me and my mom, my sisters, we grew up seeing pretty much the destruction of alcoholism and drug use, and we saw suffering alcoholics all around us all the time. I saw people suffering all around me every day, and I remember thinking as a kid, why would anyone choose to do this to themselves and everyone around them? What kind of parent would want to disappear for days on end and just kind of leave their family at home to just kind of fend for themselves or wonder what their dad is doing, wonder what their mom is doing? You know, I grew up with parents that had substance abuse issues. And there was one thing that I was certain of. When I became an adult, I wasn't going to be anything like that. I was going to flee from it as far as I possibly could, and that wasn't going to be a part of my story. I was going to be a different kind of adult. And if there were ever people who I was entrusted to care for, they'd know for sure that I would be there for them to help them. Well, that's not how things turned out. So I discovered beer. I discovered that it was fun. I discovered that you could kind of keep this going for as long as you want to. You know, I went out with coworkers all the time for a beer after work, and then, you know, sometimes I invite those same coworkers over the next day, and no one would be there. I'd be like, oh, okay, well, I'll be at the bar if you guys want to see me there, or, you know, the drinks here are kind of expensive. I wonder how much an Amsterdam is or something. They're way cheaper in the store. So I spent the early days of alcoholism trying to like figure out my limits already. You know, when I picked up a bottle, I wasn't, I immediately started abusing it. I have a young nephew who is 16 now. He's already kind of starting to experiment with beer, him and his friends and things like that. And everyone in my family knows that I'm in AA, that I'm an alcoholic, and that I've been sober for almost 2 years now. And I remember hearing my nephew kind of explain to my whole family at Christmas, actually. My poor nephew was getting grilled, like, what exactly are you doing with your friends? And, you know, I saw all of you guys sleeping on the couch one time, like, what were you guys doing? And my poor nephew was getting grilled about kind of the things he was experimenting with his friends. And I remember my nephew just looked at all of them and said, oh, don't worry, guys, I know what I'm doing. He's 16 years old. And I remember I did all those same kinds of things. I told everyone, I know what I'm doing. Please just leave me alone. Why are you always on my back? Just relax. Everything's fine. Yeah, I'm just taking the edge off. And they wanted to get my opinion during this Christmas kind of get together with the family. They said, hey, you know, your Uncle Jacob is an alcoholic. You know, he goes to AA. You should ask him what the dangers are of drinking and trying and experimenting the things you've been experimenting with. Well, thanks to AA, I kind of learned how a person becomes addicted. We become addicted by abusing. at some point, I decided, and this is my personal experience, I decided that I enjoyed the effect produced by alcohol so much that I would try to keep it going as long as I could. And the next time I had the opportunity to get drunk, I would think, well, what if I did more than I did last time? Or what if I tried alcohol with other things and I'd feel as good, if not better, than I did before? And I could have an even better experience next time because I'd love the effect produced by alcohol. You know, ease and comfort, you know, everything that we read in the book, it's all there. It's completely accurate. You go through the doctor's opinion. It's, wow, why is this an opinion? This is alcoholism right here. And a person becomes addicted by abusing the substance, but that's how you start abusing it. I'm going to try to go for better. I'm going to try to have a better experience. I'm going to keep this going for longer. And somewhere along the line, I've given up my right to chemical peace of mind. And now normal, sane thinking has gone so far from my grasp that I didn't even know how to have a bad day, you know, without wanting to medicate it. I didn't know how to just be bored without wanting to stimulate. I didn't know how to even just have a happy day or have a good time without wanting to then try to make it better. It had just shoehorned itself into my life no matter what I did. It shoehorned its way into work. I would show up to work drunk from the night before. I'd drive the company vehicle around drunk. I would, pass out at work drunk a couple times, and people would look at me and be like, oh, I don't know what's going on with Jacob. Maybe he's sick. And people thought so highly of me, they would have never guessed that I was getting drunk at work. And people didn't expect that from me. Well, I was kind of harboring this, what I call terminal selfishness, where I didn't really care what, I just wanted my ease and comfort. I just wanted to feel okay. I fully believe that if a person grows up and they don't have all their basic needs met, I don't know if maybe we've looked at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have you have food, you have shelter, you have love, you have these things. And then on top of that, you can self-actualize and become a better person, then, you know, and you can evolve. And well, if you don't have those things, you know, you grow up homeless, you're missing certain things, you're abused, you're whatever you are. I think that when a kid becomes an adult, I think your aspiration becomes to just feel okay. I just want to feel okay. That's my only aspiration. I just want to feel okay. That's it. Self-actualization, whatever. I just want to be all right now. And thus began my adulthood being propelled by avoidance of pain. So in the midst of all this, I become... It describes in the book that years and years of drinking is enough to make a skeptic out of anyone. I didn't believe in God. I thought, if there was a God, what? So people believe in God, right? But if people believe in God and there is some kind of being out there who looks after all of us and protects us from harm, why do people just drop dead of aneurysms? Why do people get in car accidents? It just seems like it's all just chaos and randomness, and no one's really looking out for us. I think it's a fantasy. I think we are kind of just left here in the craziness of Earth, and we're here to just make whatever significance we have of it. And that's as far as I'd gotten with it when it comes to me and a higher power. I didn't want anything to really do with it. So that was it for me. That's all I really cared to think. If anyone asked me about God, that's what I'd say. I knew better than to believe in a higher power. Well, My drinking had gotten so bad as a husband that my wife couldn't depend on me to be there for anything. I had become a useless, emotionally despondent drunk of a husband. And with that, she ended up moving away to another city. We split up and we were both living with her parents at the time. And the only thing I remember, the only thing that really bothered me was, well, why is she moving away from me? We're supposed to stick through it. What's the deal with that? I remember writing, going with the sponsor for the first time, going through step four and step five. You know, they have you write down a fearless moral inventory of yourselves, and they have you write down your resentments. And I remember being excited about that because I thought, well, maybe this would be my opportunity to tell my sob story, where I could explain to my sponsor that my wife abandoned me. And sadly, that's as far as my thinking went for most things in life. People just had a problem with me. People just weren't there for me. And I just had this complete terminal selfishness about my entire life. Always, I was the victim of everything, and nothing ever worked out or went my way. It was just as it describes in page 62, selfishness and self-centeredness. It's the root of our troubles. Thinking like that is, you know, one of 100 different forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. And we step on the toes of our fellows. I stepped on the toes of my wife, you know, of everyone around me. And we bring out the worst in people when we're suffering alcoholics in our addiction or drink or drug, whatever your drug of choice is. We bring out the worst in people. We bring out the worst in ourselves. And I've come to learn a lot about how far that selfishness will take you. And, you know, we read every day that many people follow it into the gates of insanity or death. So my wife moves away. I'll go back to the story with me and my wife. And I remember that was kind of like that was kind of one of the many lightning bolt moments in my life where I tried to, it was like a, whoa, okay, well, if my wife's going to move away because of my alcoholism, I'm just going to stop then. You know, I had my fun with it. I'm going to put it away now. I'm going to be a husband now. And I called her every day, convincing her, like, hey, you know what? Everything's fine now. If I do drink, it's because we got family over and stuff. I'm a fun alcoholic now. I'm a happy, jovial, you know, I'm just a cool guy kind of drinker. That's it. Don't even worry about it. If you don't want me to drink, I'll stop. Just tell me. I'll do whatever you say. Just come back. Well, enough sweet talking, and I got my wife to move back with me. Everyone in the family was so happy. Like, wow, awesome. Jacob, your wife is coming back to town. We decided to throw like a big celebration. You're like, welcome home. And when she came back, I was elated. I decided that I would celebrate. I decided I would celebrate with, I was mixing, you know, vodka. I just decided, well, I kind of have some things left away. I was hiding it. And, I'll just have like one glass of wine that everyone can see. And then I'll just have whatever I want, the actual stuff kind of hidden away. And I'll just be, this is just a good time. There's no way I can make this bad. I'm happy right now. It's just insane thinking. Well, I ended up getting so drunk that first night my wife just came back from the city she was staying that I came to in the bathtub. My wife was hosing me off with a shower head because I'd gotten so drunk I'd thrown up all over myself in front of everyone. And I was just looking up at her and looking down, and she just had this kind of despondent look on her face, like. And I was just like, I was just too afraid to say anything. I was like, oh, shit. And she just looked at me and said, I'm not going to be married to a drunk husband. And I wish I could tell you that she left that night. I thought it was weird that she kind of, she kind of kept all of her stuff in her car. You know, she didn't move anything in. I was like, here, let me help you with all your stuff. Let me unload all your stuff. Oh, no, it's fine. I'll just leave it in there. I'll deal with it in the morning. I thought it was kind of weird that she did that, but now I know why. She ended up moving back. And that was it for her. I got served divorce papers by her dad, and I just used it as a coaster for beers. And that was kind of... thus ends just one of my many trips to just being shuttled around from house to house and trying to find places to live, being homeless every once in a while, having open containers in my car, living in the back of my Suburban, and just kind of trying to spend my whole life being okay. Well, I decided... Well, actually, I'll go ahead and say this. I ended up here in the city of Santa Maria. Enough people, enough of my family had seen me, you know, being shuttled from house to house. We don't know what to do with Jacob. Well, let's get him out to a new city. Let's see how he does there. We'll move him in with his grandparents, and he will maybe there'll be something in the water there that'll change him, whatever. So I ended up moving in with my poor grandparents, who are like, oh, I'm so excited to see my grandson. And I was a terror to them. I was, I'm going to go ahead and say that by the grace of God, one day they sat down with me and they said, Jacob, what you're doing is not working. You had all these great ideas that we were all for. You had this one idea to get on a medication that made you sick when you drank alcohol. What was that? And I just said, someone can help me with the name of it. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So, antabuse. Thank you. I was taking antabuse and, I just thought problem solved. If I take antabuse, then I won't drink. I mean, I can't keep it down. I'll get sick. Well, what I ended up doing was like doing a bunch of research on my phone, being like, how long antabuse in system before drink again? And this is insane to me that I figured it out, but I got my exact R&D research down. I figured it out. For a person of my body weight, if I'm taking multivitamins, 2.5 days. It's 2.5 days where I can be able to drink after taking antabuse. That is crazy to me that I figured that out. Just through R&D experimentation. I think that a person who does something like that is suffering from alcoholic insanity. And I think explaining that to my sponsor really opened my mind to that, that I really went through with that. They said, okay, so the antabuse thing isn't going to work. I went to inpatient treatment, you know, 5150s. I went to outpatient stuff, or I went to, I don't know if y'all went to LAGS recovery centers. RIP LAGS recovery centers, right? That only worked as long as it did. I don't know what happened, but they're gone now. So I was kind of left to my own devices. And I was told, okay, have you considered AA? Well, that have you considered AA turned into... You're going to AA now if you want to live here. If you're not going to AA, there's the riverbed. And I said, okay, I guess I'm going to AA. I think these people are crazy. I think this program was invented in the 1950s and it's way out of date now. And new research is in. You can control your drinking if you just figure out how. And I will figure out how. I just haven't found it yet. So... I ended up going to AA. I went to my first meeting of AA, and you guys said some crazy stuff in here. Like, we don't struggle. We don't struggle. That is something that is actually written in the big book. And I remember hearing that saying, what? Isn't life characterized as a struggle? Like, any nature documentary that you watch, like, oh, life is hard in the rainforest, and every animal here struggles in its natural environment. I'm like, that's what we're doing too, right? Isn't life just a struggle? You know, I heard you know, we became more interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. We stopped worrying about ourselves and just all kinds of, you guys used a whole bunch of buzzwords, resentments, what else, acceptance. And I just kind of politely listen and nod, and I have no idea what any of you guys were talking about, but eventually something changed when I just kept exposing myself to the message. I just kept coming back to the rooms. We don't say keep coming back for no reason. I was told you're going to go to a meeting 6 days a week and you can take one day off and that's it. I was forced to come here 6 days a week, and I thank God for that, because this program doesn't require a perfect understanding of it to work. It doesn't require like I know exactly what's on page 195, and now I've studied this book for ages. I know I can, when Jim reads something, I read along with him. It doesn't require a perfect understanding for you to start to really get the program. That's the crazy thing to me. I've learned that God is in charge of results here. And if you seek him, he can and will do things for you that you haven't been able to do yourself. So I kept looking back there in that corner, and after hearing my own story again and again about how these people in here had this, they described it as a hopeless state of mind and body, which I think was a very accurate representation of what I'd gotten myself into when I didn't exactly give my permission to be, but I became an alcoholic somewhere along the way. I talked to people after the meeting. We'd all kind of share the same stories about how we just like look at wine bottles and look at the ABV and like put one back and like, oh, I did that kind of shit too. I realized I was kind of among my people. I wasn't like I'm not an alcoholic. The more time I spent in here, I began to realize, wow, I'm kind of exactly like these people. I think these people are like me. I'm like them. And I'm amongst my people who completely understand me. I think some of us have been through worse things than others. Maybe I didn't get in trouble with the law. Some people have. But either way, it's like I just kind of felt a sense of belonging because I was sort of forced to be here. And I learned that I made a very small change in my life to spend an hour a day in the rooms, right? That's like a very small, okay, let's say that my life is going this way, right? It's just a straight line. And that straight line is jails, institutions, and death. Well, this might not seem, and me deciding to come to a meeting, like one meeting a day for an hour, maybe changed your trajectory like that much. So it doesn't seem like much right here, but if I had a pole that went from the parking lot to the other side of the street, and I kind of took that pole and bent it a little bit this way, it doesn't look like much when you're holding it, but when you turn your head and you look all the way out on the other side, the pole's gonna be way up high, the cars can drive under it. Meaning, if you just make a small little change now, it might not feel like much. It might not seem like you're doing a whole lot, but the trajectory of your entire life is going to change drastically if you just stick to it. I decided I would get a sponsor. I kept telling my grandparents, I'm going to wait for the perfect sponsor. I'm going to wait for the perfect one. They're going to agree with me on all my stuff. I'm not going to have any arguments with them, and they're going to co-sign on everything I tell them, and we're going to it'll be perfect. I'm waiting for the unicorn sponsor, and they're just like, I think you should just get one now. Just find one. And then, I heard like there is such a thing as temporary sponsors in this room. Fantastic. I'll just find one of those, whatever. I'm being told to do it. Well, he's been my sponsor for almost 2 years now. And working the steps with him, I can't recommend it enough. I don't know how else to, I wish I could word it more cleverly, but step two, my sponsor and I spent a lot of time on, I did my damnedest to convince him. You can't ask me to trust in a higher power. I'm not going to mean it. If you ask me to believe in God, I could say it. Like, yeah, I'm going to trust that there is a power in this room that could restore me to insanity. But what if tomorrow happens and I don't feel that way anymore? You know, what if, you know, something bad happens at work and I decide not to call you? Or, like, if the only thing I felt like I could really do is just kind of express my emotion right now, I could say, yeah, I believe in a higher power, and maybe I could make a decision. But what if I, in the future, I don't make that decision? I fuck it all up again. What if I start to build up my life again and step on top of it and, you know, put another piece down and climb on top of it, and the fall is going to hurt a lot more, you know, compared to if I just kind of stayed down where I was. You know, if I'm at the bottom and I have nothing and I fuck it up, then fine. But if I'm, you know, I got my job, I got this back, I got everything back. Well, then the fall's gonna hurt more. Well, I did my damnedest to convince him, and he told me, Jacob, the hoop is a lot wider than you think it is. And I learned later that that is in the 12 and 12. The hoop is a lot wider than you think it is. So I kept thinking about that the whole time. Just him saying the hoop is a lot wider than you think it is. What does that even, what does that mean? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to trust silence? How am I supposed to give my, how am I supposed to make something that doesn't answer me my guardian? How am I supposed to put my care, you know, my will and my life into the care of something where I ask him a question, I don't hear anything? How are you supposed to have a relationship with something like that? That doesn't even make any sense. What are you asking me to do? Well, I spent a lot of time chewing on this, and I remember I was driving home from work one day. This was almost 2 years ago. I had a particularly messed up day at work. Everything was in place for a relapse. I was thinking, well, what would be the best way to do this? How can I brought my lunch bag with me. I could sneak something into the house. No one would notice. How can I plan this perfect relapse? How long could I keep it going for before people notice, oh, Jacob's drinking again? How do I do this? Where do I go? What am I going to pick up? Should I do a handle or a fifth? And I just remember driving towards the liquor store that I always went to. And I'm just like, I remember just hearing all the stuff. Remember, I spent every day in these rooms. So everyone's voices just, you know, this person saying that, oh, lift the obsession. Oh, turn your thoughts to someone you can help. You know, acceptance is the answer. Like all these things, I've just inundated and marinated myself in the message of AA. And I just, the thing that really stuck with me was I prayed for God to remove the obsession. I prayed for God to remove the obsession. So I was just like, you know, white knuckle on the steering wheel. I'm just like, you know what, God, if you are real, and you do these things that people describe you doing, and you do lift the obsession, and you can take this thing from me that is way too heavy for me right now, if you can do that for me, I'll do everything else. I'll put pen to paper. I'll write down my resentments. I'll find a sponsor. I'll do everything else. Just if you can lift this from me, please do that for me. And then I just drove home. I haven't had the urge to drink ever since. That was the first spiritual experience I had in this room. And I've come to know him, this power that showed this sign to me. I began to learn about him. I learned his name. And I learned that his name is I Am. I got to learn he has a family, and he wants me to be a part of that family. He has a son, and his name is God with us. And he's done for me what I could not do for myself. With this obsession gone, I spent my time working the steps. I just figured, you know what? Okay, I'll keep going AA. I'll stay on this course. I haven't had the urge to drink. Maybe this would be a good time to call my sponsor. I don't know. I kept calling my sponsor and asking how he was doing. And he's like, I'm fine. Do you need something? How about we do some step work? Are you all right? Something's different about you. And this fourth step that I was excited for because I'd get to tell my sob story ended up being the step that taught me true consideration for fellow man. Well, what was your part in everything? What did you do? I'd written down things like how, I used to work at Chumash Casino and I was caught sleeping in the janitor closet, nursing a hangover. And what I wrote down in my resentments list was, I was embarrassed and ashamed by my employer at Chumash Casino. They publicly humiliated me. And I remember, I was about to read that to my sponsor, and he was just sitting there all patiently looking at me while we were sitting in the car, and I was embarrassed to read it to him, because I was like, wow, is that really as far as my thinking went? That I was just like, oh, it was all about me? What about the harm I could have done driving the company vehicle around drunk? What was going on with... I definitely brought out the worst in everyone in my life. I stepped on the toes of my fellows. I did all these things. And instead of this being a step where I got to tell my sob story, I got to learn consideration for fellow man. And then 6 and 7 came along. I didn't have the obsession to drink. I didn't know what to do with myself. I just felt like maybe I'd just launch into a course of vigorous action, as it described in the book. You know, after step 3, when we make a decision to turn our will into the lives of, and our lives into the care of God, a whole bunch of things just become possible. I got to talk about my character defects. I got to talk about the things that my shortcomings as a person and how those things affect everyone around me. And I got to learn not to take things so personally and how I should really consider, well, if I'm suffering this kind of injustice or at work or whatever, or, you know, if I get in an argument with someone, maybe consider the other person. Maybe the other person might be sick just like you. You know, as they describe in the book, there's all kinds of things. Maybe you shouldn't be so judgmental towards people, Jacob, because you're being judgmental of God's handiwork. Just things like that. But all these things that I really got to learn. This book ended up... You know, I came here to learn how to beat alcoholism, and this became a big, instruction manual of how to live life. If AA were just we all show up and we're like holding our seats being like, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do it. This wouldn't have lasted this long. And if this book was just, here's how not to drink, avoid it, move to the mountains, never return to civilization. Then Eskimo will show up. Thank you. That is in the book, yes. So I just wanted to give this glory to a higher power that did something for me I wasn't able to do. Right now, you might be a suffering alcoholic. You might have something that's too heavy for you. It's weighed down on you. You're buckling. It's too much for you. It was too much for me. It was too much for any of us. Anyone who managed to get themselves on that board, you know, the birthday meetings where I'm looking at 25, 29, 2, 7 years, that's too much for any of those people. And those are some of the brightest people I've met in these rooms. I urge you, I strongly suggest that you find yourself a sponsor. You expose yourself to the message of these rooms. Hear the same things over and over again. Hear them again, and then hear them again. And you'll hear those voices. You'll hear these familiar things just pop up through as you go throughout life. And God willing, you'll remember it when you need to. And you'll find him in a place where he may be found. And maybe one day, and I hope this for everyone here, that you'd be willing to just give that burden up. I know it might not make a lot of sense right now, but when you're in that moment, I just hope you have that spiritual experience. And not just that spiritual experience, that we all have a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Who wants to have a spiritual awakening? That sounds awesome. My whole life has been changed. And I'm just so infinitely grateful to have this higher power, as they, you know, I said, God with us. I know it's not a religious program, but we describe it in the book as conscious contact with a higher power. It means that there's something there with you all the time that you remember is there. How can I be helpful instead? Or what do you think about this? You know, having a constant companion with you throughout all of life's challenges is just completely changed. It'll change your outlook on life. It'll give you a completely radicalized view on everything. So I'm infinitely grateful for this program, and thank you all so much for being here. And let's all write our own story in the back of this book. Of people just like you and me, we'll write our own chapter. I'm Jacob. Thank you so much for letting me share tonight. And God bless you and keep all of you. Thank you.
Awesome. Let's give Jacob another round of applause. All right. Thank you for speaking tonight. Anybody who would like to come up after the meeting to thank the speaker is more than welcome.